Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. Folks, we've got a show favorite, and I know it's a favorite of yours too. Kak Young is back with us, and she's going to talk about her latest book that I'm promoting anyway, and that's Supposedly Invited Person's Guide to Raising a Dog. Animal lovers, sit back, relax. This is going to be a wonderful show. This show has so much love in it with the energy of doggies. And we're going to talk a little bit about kitty cats, too. So just sit back and relax and listen. Now, the information shared on Get Over It, this is intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. But the real question is, are you really ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is a belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I am the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, the Men and Money book, and Masterful Choices, the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the fullest. And my clients say that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. Now, my background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help you. To find out more about me and the services I offer, visit my website, MoniqueChapman.com. I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. You can also sign up for my opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living, from my website. And again, that's MoniqueChapman.com. My guest today, Kak Young, has been a producer, writer, and director in the Hollywood television industry for over 25 years and has earned a PhD in natural health and a doctorate in naturopathy. I always say that wrong. She is the author of 12 books and is also a licensed religious science minister, a certified archetypical therapist and counselor, a certified meditation teacher, a career coach for aspiring actors and directors, and a former pilot of private airplanes. She is currently working on a black belt in Aikido and is a certified medical Qigong instructor. Now, of Irish descent, she also knows how to spin or yarn. Okay, so we're going to have some fun. Now, Kak is very active on the behalf of animal rights and fostering and preserving women's rights, which is so timely right now. Well, welcome back, Kak.
Thank you, Monique. It's always a joy to be with you on the air or just at any time. You're so special. I love our connection.
Oh, I love our connection, too, and I'm so glad to have you back on the show. This book that we're talking about today, The Supposedly Enlightened Person's Guide to Raising a Dog, is beautiful. Folks, this is a very a short book, if you will. It's not a lot of pages. It's beautifully illustrated. It's got a lot of entertaining and information, and it's extremely informative. Now, Kak, you've been a long-time cat lover. Let's talk about the transition to the dog.
Well, yes, thank you. It was, probably 40-some years ago, a friend of mine was rescuing cats out of her backyard in Hollywood, and she would trap feral cats, take them to the vet, have them spayed or neutered, and then find homes for them. So one of the homes she found for one of her cats was me, and I adopted this very cute little black cat named Lucy. And I had Lucy. Lucy lived to be 23 3/4 years old.
Wow. Amazing.
Yes, and then it was amazing. She was very healthy and very spry and just the apple of my eye. And over the years, and then I adopted another cat. I suppose I've had 11 or 12 cats, over the years. And Lucy was just the main one. I mean, she stole my heart. She taught me how to be a cat mother. She taught me when it was okay to leave her alone. She taught me when it wasn't. We were very, very connected, if you will, just spiritually, etc. She was just this amazing little teacher. And all my other cats have been extraordinary. They are, each one of them has a personality, and I probably went overboard in terms of loving them and calling them my children and taking care of them. So I've always been comfortable with cats. I've always, I read every book there was. I read The Natural Cat. I read Dot Cat Behavior. I became really comfortable as a lay expert, if you will, on cat behavior and cat health, and I would always help my cats get over a particular health challenge by ourselves. We would do it ourselves. We would do it naturally, homeopathically. And then if they needed vet care, we would certainly do that. But it was so amazing because I just fell into being a cat mommy, and it was so rich and so good. And then you can share cat stories, and cat lovers seem to gravitate to each other. And pretty soon I had cat rugs and cat cups and cat measuring spoons and you name it, cat door knockers. I was just the crazy cat person on the hill. And so I adopted, when I moved to Cambria 10 years ago, I adopted 6 cats. A couple had just passed away. They lived at least, gosh, I think 14, 16 years besides Lucy, who was a record holder. And so I had 6 cats, and it was wonderful. And I didn't need another pet, Monique. I didn't need that until I went to a Christmas walk-through in Toluca Lake, and there I saw this little dog all wrapped up in a blanket, shivering, being held by one of the rescue people, and I saw this face, and something changed. Something happened, and it snapped, and I transitioned in that moment from cat to dog, or cat and dog, I should say.
Well, you know, your doggy, Tallulah is the one that you found?
Yes, shivering. Tallulah was, yeah, she was the one that was shivering. Little Tallulah was there. She looked like a little baby chihuahua with the face of a Tibetan spaniel. And she was just the most beautiful, cute little thing. And I had no idea how big she was when I was interested. I thought she was this little bit of a thing that I could put in my purse. I mean, that's how uneducated I was as a dog person.
Mm-hmm. Well, surprised, because she's a little bit bigger than that.
Yes, she is. Well, she stood up. And then what I learned later is that she's Tibetan Spaniel mix and Italian Greyhound. Well, nobody knows for sure. They're all guessing. There's probably some Pomeranian in there. There's probably some Chihuahua. But when she stood up, she did have these big model legs. She's got the legs of an Italian Greyhound. So she stood up, and she was just amazing. She was like a dog on stilts. She was so cute and so elegant and proud of herself. Oh my gosh. It was as if she was given that tail at the Academy Awards and, you know, Tallulah Lake, best dog in the world, and here's your award. And so she wears that tail as though it's her greatest crowning glory.
Yes, she does. Throughout the pictures in the book, it stands out from time to time, and she's, as you said, a very proud dog. And yes, she does have gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous legs. She actually looks like my dog Sadie's brother, who lives across the street from us. So it's interesting how we have dogs that are similar. Now Sadie doesn't look like her, but you know, the dog across the street does. Now, you brought this dog home, beautiful doggy. And you had the cats. So how did that energy mix?
Well, I don't want to say that I was impulsive, but I was. I was extremely impulsive about this dog. Excuse me. And I brought the dog home. I went to pick her up. You have to go when you rescue a dog through the rescue train in Studio City. They really make sure that she's going to a home where she will be appreciated, helped, understood, and that you know how to care for a dog. So I had to fill out a questionnaire. They had to do background checks on me. They had to check with my friends to make sure that, you know, I just hadn't had a whole bunch of wine and then decided to adopt a dog. You know, they want to make sure that this is a decision you're going to live with for the rest of your life. So after all the vetting that went on, I had a meeting with her and her rescue person, and we got to know each other. All of these times, of course, is a chance for me to say, I've changed my mind. No, no, no. But Tallulah was amazing. She just kind of grabbed hold of me and said, okay, I will accept you as my caretaker and mother, but here are the rules. Now, I missed that here are the rules part. But I took her home all the way to Cambria. I went and I went to Petco at 8 o'clock in the morning when they opened, and I bought up a little seat for her to wear in the car, for her to sit in the car. I bought her a little doggy cage. I bought her a crate because they said she'll be happiest if she's crate trained for sleeping. And I just had a whole car full of all of his dog paraphernalia, and I went home. So my partner said, well, okay, dog, huh? All right, here we are. And we had to separate the cats from the dogs initially because I thought that the dog would just come in, sit down, go potty a couple times a day, and go to sleep. I mean, I really was deluded into what a dog does. Mm-hmm. I was used to cats. You see, I should have had to go to dog training 101. They should have sent me to school. I wouldn't have been quite as lame as I felt when I had this dog who, as I said, you know, mentioned earlier, she turned around and said, okay, now here are the rules. I'm here and here are the rules. And she laid them down. I was to pay attention to her. I was to give her food several times a day. I was to distribute treats. I was to take her walking. I was to take her out potty 3, 4, maybe 5 times a day. And I was to do nothing but look at her with adoring eyes and do exactly what she wanted all day long. That was her idea of how I came into her life and what my purpose was for her. Mm-hmm. Well, I wasn't prepared for quite that takeover, if you will, and I said, I have a friend in Bath, UK, Lisa Tenzin-Dolma, who has written many books on dogs. She founded the International Canine Psychology Organization, where you can get a certification at 3 different levels in dog behavior, dog training, and dog psychology. So she really has a university that people can attend online, and she has students and graduates in 47 countries. Mm-hmm. So I wrote to her sort of sheepishly and said, hi, Lisa, I know that I've met your dog, Skye and Charlie, and I love them very much, and I accidentally have a dog. Her name is Tallulah Lake, and I'm not sure I know what to do. Mm-hmm. So I began to write to Lisa the little troubles that were going on and little things, and she would say, all right, now here's what you do. And she gave me instruction step by step, really, kind of calmed me down from the shock of bringing a dog into the house. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the cats blamed it all on her because she was the dog expert. And so my cats took to writing her emails and saying, what have you done? We had a perfectly good life, and your influence convinced my mother to get a dog, and now we have this canine in our house panting and barking. What have you done? And so Lisa responded to those emails as well. And it was a very busy time. We kept Lisa at her computer quite a lot as we sort of became a household. And the cats, we did separate them. I had Catland and Doggyland because they were, it was better if everybody had their own territory. And the cats could actually come into Dogland.
Okay.
Through the little gate. But the dogs mm-hmm. couldn't go into cat land uninvited. And the cats wanted nothing to do with the puppy. Absolutely nothing. So that's how it began. And then, of course, I think I probably spent $500 on various cat and dog treats because that's the way to win their heart and to get them from being mad at you is to treat them. So I found low-cal treats for all the cats and dogs, and I was very busy. I wore, you know, like one of those tool belts, and I had cat treats in one side and dog treats in the other. So whenever I went through the house, I had to make up with somebody. I had to beg forgiveness from somebody.
Isn't it amazing how they train us like that?
Oh, yes. You know, and that's what, you know, and I really probably somewhat arrogantly considered myself to be an enlightened person and that I recycle and I choose the right things and I'm kind to people and I do all that. And I thought, well, I'm operating life on a higher level or the highest level that I can figure out so far. And then this dog came into my life and said, here's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so I had to kind of go to school with Tallulah or for Tallulah. And then Tallulah needed some behavioral training too. So I had consultants then. Tallulah liked to think of them as consultants that we hired to actually amend me. And it's true. When I went to dog training school, it was about how the owner or how the person who's raising the dog behaves with mm-hmm. the dog. And that I got as much training as Tallulah did. In fact, probably more, because once I was trained in how to help a dog change its behavior, and it's really about making decisions, isn't it? The dog makes decisions every single day. If the dog is upset or nervous, it's going to behave in a certain way. So if I can change that thinking or change that feeling by way of an action on my part or by way of a treat or by way of considering what the dog is going through, I can help that dog change that emotional state, which then results in better and more acceptable behavior.
Yes. And hopefully the dog will get it. Well, folks, we are speaking with Kak Young. She is the co-author of The Supposedly Enlightened Person's Guide to Raising a Dog with Lisa Tenzin Dolba. And you can find the book on Amazon. And it's a quick read. It's got beautiful illustrations in it. And you know what? You learn a lot about yourself by reading about how to take care of your dog. It's amazing what reflects back to you. Now, Kak, you have Tallulah, and then you also have Truffle. So Truffle came a little bit later?
Truffle came a bit later, yes. Tallulah, we were about a year, and Tallulah had been abused. I think the key thing that I learned about her is that she had been abused when she was with the previous family. I adopted her actually on her third birthday. So she had been adopted, and then the same people had returned her like 2.5 years later. She had gotten away from the animal rescue people at an event, and she'd been hit by a car. They tracked her down. They found her at a vet. She healed from this being hit by a car. But she's like a little gazelle. She likes to run and leap and tear, and you know, she's part kangaroo, this child. and she was just enthusiastic and looking to run and be free. And we think that she was tied up and chained. We believe that she was beaten or intimidated with sticks. We think she was hit with a hairbrush. And we know she was sprayed with water and teased. So when it came to getting her to allow us to comb her, Lisa had given me some advice. She said, the first thing you do is sit with her and be at her level. Then you have the brush or the comb next to you. You give her treats. You wait for her to come to you. And when you think she's comfortable, you lay the backside of the comb or brush against her, not on her head, nowhere near her head, but maybe on her side. And then you give her another treat. And you wait and wait and wait until she becomes comfortable with you and the presence of that instrument, that implement, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you begin to comb her or place it there, you continue to treat her so that she associates that implement with something positive, and not just the treat, but with your love and your compassion and your approval. So it's a threefold thing that happens there, and it's what establishes or what can change the behavior from a negative into a positive. So we got through the brush. Now, sometimes Tallulah will revert to behavior, and she'll see the brush, and she'll have that moment, and then okay. She'll remember. It's like this spark in her eye goes, oh, no, I'm safe now. Same thing with outdoor hoses. Apparently, somebody thought it was cute to tease her and spray her, and so she was very, very afraid of hoses. You couldn't even put a hose in your hand, let alone turn it on, without her cowering and whimpering in the corner. So little by little, I take her out in the backyard, give her a treat, hug her, bring the hose out. She's very wary, but little by little, we now can water things together. She can be in the presence of the hose without doing backflips and getting crazy. So it's little things like that I learned how to be patient and how to help her associate something differently from pain into pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that the former family had returned her after a couple of years. Why is it so important to have clarity around why you want a dog in your life in the first place?
Well, thank you for mentioning that, Monique. At the very back of the book, we post a list of, are you ready for a dog? And the stories are, I think, funny. People have told me they're very funny and that they're amused. And they love what Lisa says at the end of my story. I have a story about a skunk and a story about Tallulah getting sprayed. And then all the remedies that Lisa suggests. She comes in kind of like as mom. They're there. It'll be all right. And she gives us all the valuable information. And that's what our book really is about. It's about telling stories and anecdotes of what happened, followed by information that will help you and your pet have a better, healthier, stronger, and long-lasting relationship. So that's what it's about. And when we brought Truffle into the mix, it was kind of another accident, but this time we were smarter. We were more aware of what it would be like to get a second dog. And it was the best thing we did, because all of a sudden Tallulah had a buddy, and she could stop relying on me so much for attention, and she could go play with him, and Truffle became her puppy, and she became very protective of him, like a big sister, and they're best friends. They are, we got so lucky. Lisa says to me, you got so lucky. This doesn't always happen,
exactly.
But they were bonded within 13 seconds, and loving on each other. It was just amazing. And I'd gone to a rescue place, Woods Humane Society in San Luis Obispo, to drop off some things, some blankets and pillows and things that they said they needed as a donation. And the lady said, oh, would you like to see our whole cat sanctuary here? We have beautiful cats. No, I'm in a 12-step program for cats. I cannot go there. She said, well, how about the dog facility? So we went back into the dog facility, and I thought I was safe. Here you again.
Yeah,
I thought I was safe. Nope. We saw a Truffle and went, oh, my God, this dog needs a home, and, boy, we're going to be it. So we ended up with 6 cats and 2 dogs, and it's fine. It was all fine until we had the Thomas Fires here, and we had to cram everybody into a small car in 11 minutes. But other than that, Other than that, we're fine. So Truffle was a gift, and he continues to be. And Tallulah, her anxiety level calmed right down with a second dog. I think maybe the cat energy was so strong that she felt perhaps, I'm guessing here, maybe a little threatened by all the felines. Although everybody got along. I mean, she was about a year after we could take the baby gates down, and so Catland and Dogland came together, and they became integrated. And so now they eat out of each other's bowls, and they're in everybody's territory, and occasionally you'll find a dog and a cat napping together. So it's very sweet, but it had to be their choice, Monique. It had to be on their timetable. And that's what Marlene and I respected, is that they would tell us when they were ready to venture out. Now, as I said, you know, a couple of cats would jump over the baby gate, the barrier, and sniff around in Dogland, mostly to steal food, we kind of assessed, but then they could get away. They could get out of Doggyland anytime they wanted to. And they got used to each other little by little, but everything was a lesson. Everything was us trying to figure out what the needs of the animals were and how we could help them become a better family and become friends. I mean, you know, it's easy for us to go down to a pound or to a rescue place and pick up an animal, and we bring it into the house and expect everybody to be thrilled with it. Well, you know, that's not necessarily the case. Now, we got lucky because we were taught by Lisa how to put the time in with the dog to understand both of them, what their needs were. And I think Lisa's teaching and help really got us through the initial days, the tricky days. And for Lisa's wisdom alone, the book is worth people getting and reading, because her advice is so right on, is so solid, and is so helpful. You walk away a better person, and then your dog or your cats even have a better life because you read the book and integrated her information. So, you know, my little stories are just little stories, but the information Lisa gives is really the gold of the book.
Well, that, and I found from reading the book that, you know, animals truly do teach us. You know, people, you know, maybe 50, 60 years ago used to say, oh, dumb animals, and, you know, they didn't give the care and attention to animals that they receive today. But I've found that my two dogs have taught me unconditional love. Now, my dog Sadie, she's Miss Sadie Mae Chapman, okay? She's all of that, not just Sadie. She was born in my home. My one of my son's friends had a dog. He came to stay with us for a short period of time. Didn't tell me the dog was pregnant. Woke up one morning to four little squeaking doggies. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, it's like, oh, this is cute. And it was so cute watching them, you know, try to run around and do their thing. And then when it was time for them to be adopted out, I said, I'm keeping this one. And no, I'm not paying you for her. I'm keeping this one. So Sadie Mae, you know, had a home. And her mother Peyton was here. So, you know, they got to play together, and it was absolutely wonderful. But Sadie Mae was always bossy. Then a couple of years later, my son brought home Sadie Mae's nephew, Hampton. Hampton and Sadie got along well in the beginning because she, like your dog, adopted him as the baby. But Sadie's an alpha female. Hampton's an alpha male. Boy, did we have some interesting discussions in the household between the dogs.
Okay. It sounds like it.
Yeah, I've got floor-to-ceiling windows in my office, and they will sit in my office. They'll look outside. They bark at everything. And so one starts barking, then the other starts barking, then one attacks the other for barking, and vice versa. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. But, you know, they've taught me patience. They've taught me love. They've taught me how to be a little bit firmer with my little baby animals, you know, to, you know, separate them sometimes and give them their lessons. But it's absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And they also have a $60 a week treat habit. So you thought you were bad with pets. No, not at all. I think it's truly me. I'm the bad girl. Well, folks, we're speaking with Kak Young. She is the co-author of The Supposedly Enlightened Person's Guide to Raising a Dog, and she co-wrote that with Lisa Tinzin-Dolma. And the foreword was done by Mark Beckhoff, PhD. We'll talk about Mark in a minute, but if you want to check Kak out, please do at her website, kakyoung.com. Now, how did you guys find Mark to do the forward for you? Because I found that to be very grounding and enlightening myself.
Oh, well, thank you. Mark and Lisa go back a long ways. They know each other from the work they do with dogs and animals, and they really are extraordinary friends. And Lisa has written the foreword to one of Mark's books and vice versa. So Lisa asked him if he would write the foreword to this book, and he said he would be delighted to. And laughed. He said, you know, he laughed, and that was great. He's a pretty serious guy, but he does have a sense of humor. And he thought that, well, he thought that how we combined our talents and the information about dogs was really informative and helpful.
Okay. Well, you know, when I got Miss Sadie Mae and she was born in the house, I was telling my physician that, you know, I got a dog, and the look of horror on his face, I'm like, oh, my God. I said, what's wrong with that? And he goes, you'll have toilet training issues and this, that, and the other. And I said, I'm not worried about it. It'll work out. So why is it some people think that animals are just a burden?
Well, I think because they haven't quite opened their hearts yet. They haven't experienced an animal at that level yet. I know certainly Lucy was probably my first animal that really bored into my heart and stayed there. And as I really opened my heart to my cats, there was room and in a different way for Tallulah to come in and take up that dog space that I didn't even know I had a lack of dog, but I apparently had a big lack of dog because she filled it. And boy, you know, I feel because of my animals and my lovely companion Marlene, my life is so full. It's overflowing with abundance and goodness. And I don't know what I would have been or done without these creatures coming into my life and gifting me with their presence, their sweetness, and their knowledge. I mean, you know, they are dependent in a certain way, and they are independent, and they are strong. So when you have a problem or an issue, they are tuned into that, and they're right beside you to say, look, we're in this together. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal, and I'll help you. It's just, it's amazing. I can't even describe it other than that, but certainly in the fire when we all had to run away, they were scared, but they did exactly what we told them to, and you know, in the car we got, and away we went. So, and they were very well behaved. I mean, if you can imagine, seven of us, well, five cats, two dogs, seven, and two adults, nine people in the Motel 6 escaping for a week. It was, we had cat litter boxes, we had puppy pads, we had everything.
Everything
it was. Everything we needed, and we got very, very, very close, all nine of us. So it was quite an experience. And I think if I hadn't done all the training with Tallulah, and if I hadn't gone to school with her, I mean, we took advantage of Petco has training classes for just, like, it's like $100, $80, or you can get them even for cheaper than that when they have their specials. But you can, you learn about your animal, and you learn about yourself, and you learn how quickly animals respond when you do the right thing. So yeah. Learning to do the right thing and learning to apply the right kind of praise and no punishment, no fear, no only positive training, only gentle manipulation of these creatures. The people who put those big chains with the I don't want to say the little points that go mm-hmm. into the dog's neck,
yeah,
and they pull on them.
Yeah, they do that with the pit bulls. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cruel. That's cruel. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, we don't go for any of that. We don't go for anything that stirs up a dog and then changes it. We go straight with positive reinforcement, calm behavior, and patient training. And it doesn't take long. If you have an abused dog who is into a really negative pattern, you're going to have to bring it forward into a neutral pattern and then into a positive pattern. So mm-hmm. you have twice the amount of work, but it doesn't take that long. And the rewards are fantastic. You can train your dog to stop jumping on you. You can train your dog to stop barking if you want to. You can train your dog with positive reinforcement, you know, in every area of your life. The only thing you can't change is a physical disability, but there are ways to help the dog that way too. I just think that all creatures should be allowed to live a free and happy life and not in any kind of bondage or torture. Certainly, you know, the subject of puppy mills comes to mind. And I think that really, when you have that bond with an animal, there's nothing deeper, there's nothing better. And it does, like you said, Monique, it does change you. It softens you. It gives you a whole different dimension. And then the two of you go through life together. And hopefully you're a better person, and so is the animal, for having had that union.
Oh, most definitely. When I step out of the house without Sadie, people will say, well, where's the dog?
Exactly.
Bring us together. I mean, she's truly my buddy. I just take her every place, and she knows when she's out. She acts a certain way, and she's very prim and proper. She won't let anybody touch her, but she doesn't like to be touched by strangers, but she will pose for you. And then if she really likes you, she'll stand up on her hind legs, and then she'll put her front paws together as if she's praying for you. But if she doesn't like you, she doesn't do that too much. But it's such a wonderful feeling. And, you know, this dog helped my mom with her transition. My mom was still alive when she was born, so my mom got to hold her when she was 2 days old. And my mom had stage 4 lung cancer and Alzheimer's, so she was leaving us. But she would always want to see the dog, had to have the dog. And Sadie would come and sit with my mom and pray for my mom. And my mom would say, Sadie, pray for me. And she would sit, and she would hold that position as long as she possibly could. And that helped my mom with her transition. You know, it's just amazing how that, you know, just that little bit of love. We gave Sadie the love, and Sadie returned it in spades to everyone. And my husband, who always, threatened me about getting an animal because I wanted an animal when the kids were young, and he's like, I'll herd it. I don't like dogs, da-da-da-da-da. So when we got this dog, I said, if you herd it, I'm going to put you in jail. Now my husband will come home, and he talks to Sadie and Hampton first, then the kids, and then he might say hello to me. He's the number one treat giver, the number one let's go potty giver. I mean, he's taking care of this dog as if he had given birth to it. So it's amazing how the animal will soften you and bring love, you know, bring that amount of love to you. Now, how important is it, CAC, for a certain breed of dog to pick a certain breed and to investigate that?
Well, that's such a great question and a good point. I was kind of oblivious to that before I got into dog world, and it's very, very important. There are certain dogs that are that have certain personalities, and certain qualities, I would say, to their breed. And some of them are very calm and dependent, and some of them are very forward and aggressive, if you will, or let's say assertive. They're assertive, and for example, a terrier is going to run and dig and do a lot of things, dog-like things, mm-hmm. and breeds that are trained to hunt. They have that in their DNA. If you get a dog that is like an Australian sheep herder, he or she's going to try and herd you when you're out in public. It's like, you know, that's their instinct. If you, mm-hmm. you're going to come my way, and I'm going to show you what to do. So you want to work with that and have that as a positive quality, but you don't want him herding you across the street and, you know, when it's not appropriate. I'm kidding. I'm making a joke. But mm-hmm. I think you have to know what kind of a dog you want. If you want a lap dog, if you want a dog that's going to protect your home, mm-hmm. and bark a lot, and make you aware of things. If you want a dog that's friendly with your children, you have to go online. And the beautiful thing is that there's so much information online about that. I don't think that you have to get a purebred. I'm even suggesting that there are more dogs out there that need homes through rescues and through other humane societies and shelters. Just make sure, please, that you spend some time with the dog. If you want to adopt a dog that shows signs of abuse, great. Just make sure you know how to do that. Read this book. Read other books on training and behavior. Lisa Tenzin-Dolma has several books, one called The Heartbeat at Your Feet. And her book, Charlie the Dog Who Came in from the Wild, is a book mm-hmm. that will just tear your heart sideways. She adopted or fostered a Romanian rescue dog, you know, and that's a whole other conversation and a whole other show about how dogs are treated in other countries. And there are groups that go over there and round up these dogs that have been left to die, and they ship them to different parts of the world, England, Spain, mm-hmm. France. And so she adopted this Romanian one-eyed dog, and Charlie was the most amazing teacher of her life, and I went through every day with Charlie. But he had behavioral problems, he had regressions, he had all kinds of things, and he finally died, we think, from inflicted injuries that happened to him in Romania. And he finally died, but he was with her, I think, 3 years. But it was an amazing story, because there were just certain things where she is an expert dog behavioralist and dog psychologist, obviously, but she also had some challenges where she would have to really hold firm with him when he would revert to fearful situations. So you have to know a little bit more about a dog, and you have to know the breeds and the tendencies. There are pit bulls that are sweet and adorable and amazing and loving and kind, and then there are pit bulls that have been trained to be aggressive and to be killers. So you have to know what you're getting, and you have to take the time to research it and then spend time with the dog, and even take the dog on a trial. Go hire a dog expert, hire a dog trainer for a little time, and let that trainer work with the dog and give you feedback. Because if you end up in a household full of children with a dog that can be aggressive or have aggressive tendencies, you don't want to do that. So do your homework. Just as you want to adopt a child, you want to know about it. You want to know a little bit about its medical history. You want to know where it's come from. And then your chances of bonding are stronger.
Okay. Well, what about finding a vet? Because I've gone through, 7 vets, because I'm picky. And I learned finally that if you get an animal, buy the pet insurance before you bring the animal home. Because anything yes. after that is a pre-existing condition. And Miss Sadie loves to go to the vet at least every couple of months, and I have to drop $400 or $500. So please, please, please get that pet insurance. But how important is it to find the right vet for the dog and for you? Because I've had vets initially that were great with the dog and I didn't get along with, and vice versa. So how important is that?
Well, it's extremely important. You have to have a good rapport with your physician, and you need to be able to trust your vet. You have to be able to do that because, and I have the same issues too. I research a lot. I know a lot. So I come into an examination with a lot of knowledge. I'm there to say, okay, well, it also looks like this, and what about this tendency? And I've already researched what drugs might alleviate this particular situation. Truffle has, from time to time, skin irritation, and we aren't sure if it's allergies. We aren't sure what it is. We're not sure if he's allergic to the flea medicine, and we're still working with a vet. And we have several different vets that we have gone to, mostly just because one vet's been on vacation and we've needed to go there, and we've found that we like a particular vet better than the others. Now, it's really interesting. One of the vets I choose for the cats, and the other one I choose for the dogs. And it's because they have to also be open to an exchange with me at a level where they don't put me down or they don't think that they're much more knowledgeable, because I come in with, like I said, and I'm sure you do too, with research and knowledge about the condition, to the best that I can as a layperson. Mm-hmm. So I look for a vet who's open to exchange and who doesn't have to play God in the room. And the same thing for groomers. Grooming is really important for a dog, that they're comfortable, especially an abused dog. So you might have to go visit a couple of groomers. You might have to see how your dog responds to that groomer before they even go there. And, you know, at first, Tallulah hated getting a bath. She doesn't have to go as often as Truffle does. Truffle's a Havanese, and he's a little white, curly guy, and he's a dust magnet. I mean, he's like Pigpen, you know. He just attracts dirt. So he has to go more often to the groomer. But Tallulah no longer hates that, because we found a groomer that is very kind and very patient, and just like a vet would, gets down on their knees and hands the dog a treat when they first meet them, and breaks that barrier, breaks that fear barrier, and then treats them well and has them done on time and doesn't put them in cages. I mean, I don't like to have a groomer who puts a dog in a cage and blows air at them. I like the dogs to, if they like the fan or enjoy that, but nothing really noisy that penetrates their ears and hurts their hearing. I like someone to take a little bit care, tender care of my dogs. So we found that where we live in Ventura now, but I had to go through four or five different groomers in Cambria and here, and it's not easy all the time, but you have to be alert. You have to be a detective and check out, you know, what the place looks like, whether it's dirty, how the other dogs are being kept. If everybody's yipping and unhappy in their cages, don't take your dog there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I groom Sadie myself because this is me and my thing. I just don't trust other people. So, and she hates baths, but she knows that she has to smell good. You say smell good, she'll wag her tail. If you say bath, she hides the tail and she's running off to someplace else. So it's amazing how even if you phrase something in a certain way, that the dog gets it and the dog gives you love. Now, Kat, we've spent almost an hour together. What words of wisdom would you give to someone who is looking to bring a furry baby into their home?
Well, I would say shop around. Go and meet some dogs. If you have never had a dog before, go to some shelters. Become familiar with dogs. Get to know the personalities. Figure out what is best for your lifestyle and your family. Research the breeds a little bit. Find out about the qualities. I would say educate yourself. Learn a little bit about dogs and dog world. I mean, it's fun to watch the National Dog Show and find out about the different breeds, but that's not reality. Those are pampered dogs. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to know that if the dog is going to cost you some money. It's going to need vet care. It's going to need pet insurance. It's going to need inoculations. It's going to need things, as we all do. So you have to have a budget for that, and you have to be able to feed it the proper food. You have to know what kind of food is good. You just don't grab something off the shelf in the grocery store. So you want to research it. You want to become familiar with your patterns and then bring a dog in that's going to be compatible and have patience. Know that there's going to be a transition period. The dog is a feeling, sentient, emotional being. It's been said that a dog is like a four-year-old. So it has that intelligence and acute hearing and other sensibilities that we can learn from. So educate yourself, know what you're doing, and then be open to have the relationship of your lifetime. Dogs will change your life. They changed mine. They will open your heart. They will bring you rewards and goodness that you could never have imagined before. So I think everybody should have a dog or two and run their life just with an open heart, full of love. And you also get exercise when you walk your dog. So there's so many benefits for you and your dog. And there's just nothing like puppy love.
No, there's not. Amen to that. Well, folks, we've been speaking with Kak Young. She's the co-author of The Supposedly Enlightened Person's Dog. The Supposedly Enlightened Person's Guide to Raising a Dog, and she co-wrote that with Lisa Tinzen-Doma. You can check out her other books at kakyoung.com. Books available on Amazon. It's a wonderful little book. If you know anybody who has dog, cat, raccoon, whatever it is that they're trying to train in their home, gift them with this book. It's going to be wonderful to them. It's delightful. They'll absolutely enjoy it. So, Kak, thank you very much for being with me today. And the audience, thank you for being with me as well as we collectively get over it and now have information to go out and pick our favorite little fur baby. I am honored and I do appreciate your time and attention. The divine in me honors the divine in you. And when you're ready to live a more balanced life, intuitive consultations are 30 minutes longer if you give me a call. Intuitive consultations, 30 minutes or longer, are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. So love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself and make that call, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of love and possibly adopting a doggie. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.